So look, what I want to do this session is to think a little bit more about how we can put together an evangelistic strategy for our church plant. So Tom's going to come in later and he's going to think about courses, and it may well be that you want to incorporate that into your strategy. We had a phrase a while ago. We thought about other things that we could do. We thought about preaching. So what I'm wanting us to do is, in one sense, to sort of think, okay, there are different methodologies, ways by which we can take the gospel and get it to people. What I want us to think about is kind of a bigger picture. Okay, given where we are and who we are, what are we going to do? What's that going to look like? Now, ideally, this is the kind of thing that if you're year on year, you're doing back in May, as you look at the year ahead. And so I imagine, you guys and staff teams would have thought, actually, what's next year going to look like? And that's already resolved. Church plant-wise, it's about sort of looking into the future, thinking, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to do that? So I always say, before you launch, you need two plans. You need a plan to launch, you need a plan to grow. And this stuff here sits under the plan to grow. Now, what's it? That plan may or may not work. It's a plan on paper, and the Lord is king, and he will determine. It's a great one, isn't it? Jonah, which we're looking at this week, what a rubbish plan that was. And yet, God brought about the salvation of Nineveh. God can do whatever he wants. But given that we're looking ahead, and we've got resources and people, and we're under God saying, what would be a sensible thing to do in order to reach people with the gospel? And this sits under that plan for growth. It's more, the plan for growth is more than evangelism, but it must include evangelism. Otherwise, you are simply reinvigorating lapsed believers or sheep stealing. I guess you could be rescuing maroon disciples, but you want to be going after the people in your neighborhood who don't know the Lord Jesus Christ, who've never heard the gospel, have not understood that they could be returned to the overseer of their souls. So at this point, I'm not trying to tell you what to do. What you guys decide to do in your context will be shaped by who you are, your context, and so on and so forth. I think what I'm trying to do is it is help you think through how you might decide what you do, to go one step back. So, for example, when we planted Christchurch Ballon back in 2002, Christianity Explored was the course that was running at the time. And I'd done that, I knew it, and we just ran it. And that's what we did in Ballon. Worked quite well for us. And so for several years, we ran it almost every term, and you could almost guarantee you would just about have enough to make it work. And, okay, it would be in someone's house rather than in a big room because the numbers were smaller, but it just worked for us. But a few years later, find ourselves in Peckham. We knew enough about Peckham to know that probably wouldn't fly in quite the same way. And so we changed what we wanted to do to make it more suitable. We realized that the dynamics were different. The aptitude of various people meant that we had to shape our evangelistic strategy around what people could actually do. In the early days, I thought, for the sake of simplicity, we'll teach Mark's gospel so everyone gets Mark's gospel. We'll teach it so well that people could lead a friend to Christ through Mark's gospel. They could do a one-to-one Bible study at some point. Now, I hadn't really asked the question, is that a normal thing? Let's be honest, it is an odd thing. Meeting up with someone and opening the Bible is an odd thing. It doesn't matter what culture you're from. But somehow, it seemed to be more appropriate in someone like Ballon than it would be in someone like Peckham. So we thought, okay, let's try that. And then we realized, actually, I'm not sure this is going to work. So in the end, we ended up back at a sort of meal scenario, centrally located. We invited people to come. We provided food, we provided context, we would have discussions. We didn't do Christianity Explored. We just worked through some key passages in Mark's gospel. It was over six evenings, people had a bit of chat on their tables, a bit of a talky bit from me, and it worked. I was struck, though, prior to that, by a discussion with Jay Mariner and Yannick Christos Wahab, because historically Jay had kind of, they'd had home groups, and they tried to make them evangelistic home groups to which you could invite someone. Partly because the black cultures that they were reaching, there was a familiarity with the gospel, and there was therefore some low-hanging fruit, and there was a sort of God-fearing background, and people were comfortable with that. So you could do a lot of the sorting out and sort of the reconfiguration of the gospel in people's heads. In that context, it worked. But Jay and Yannick hit on the idea that actually what would be good is to have an evening. And it would be, they did it in a bar. They had a topic which drove it. So the one that sticks in my mind is Yannick speaking on toxic masculinity. He would speak. There'd be a panel, and there was a mix of people on there, both male and female, and then people would invite discussion and contributions from the floor. And this really worked. I mean, it really worked. They had several evenings like this where people would come, and non-Christians or people who are not part of their church family, who were perhaps not signed up completely to, you know, Block's doctrinal basis of faith, would be happy coming into that environment, hearing stuff and interacting with it publicly and having meaningful exchanges and so on. You just thought that got serious traction. In other words, those things are simply illustrative, whether it's Brixton, Peckham, Bower. The ambition is the same. How do we get people to hear and interact with meaningfully the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ in a way that is appropriate for them, given where they are? And it's different, and it's somewhat determined by context, and you guys will know that better than others. But it's worth us coming back and saying, okay, how might we do that? How do we put together a sensible plan to reach the people we're trying to reach with the gospel? That's what I wanted to think about a bit more. Now, before we do that, what I'd love to do, first of all, is think of an evangelistic event that you've attended recently. So an event. So do you remember? I'll say more about that. What did you make of it? What was good about it? What was bad about it? So just think of one evangelistic event you've been to recently. Get that in your mind's eye. What did you make of it? What was good? What was bad? Give some thought to that. Stick some stuff down on a sheet of paper, and I'll give you a couple of minutes, and then just we'll reflect on that. Okay, off you go. Let's just go around. Boys online, Barry, go first. What was the event you had in your mind? It was gone. John, what was the event you had?
So the one that stands out for me was called the Summer Fest. And I'm a bit biased because I put that together. But stepping back from that, it was excellent because we were very clear on what we were trying to do. And that was to reach families in our valley that weren't attending church.
Yeah.
And it did exactly that. We used food, fun games, to add about 500 or 600 people through the gate.
So some of that just
for those were not in any way. That was very successful.
So I'm guessing, given it's South African, it was food, bit of music, bit of sport, fun for the kids. Would that be right?
Yeah. And the fact that we've done it before also helps, because I think what your original thing is to have a plan. And I think what I've seen works well is when you keep doing things year in, year out, people start to get to know, yeah, I remember that from last year. And it just attracts more and more people. So, yeah, I think the idea was to have food, and we had a variety of food. So it wasn't just hot dogs and boerewors rolls. It was burgers. There was noodles and like Thai chicken, and we had an ice cream guy there. We had someone doing popcorn and sweets. So we're trying to appeal to a lot of people.
All right, let me move on. Barry, what's the event? Just give us the event. What was it? Not so much the analysis of it, but what was the event you were thinking of?
for me, I was thinking of a Churches of Hounslow event, joint event, in which we, on Good Friday, in which there is a procession and a bit of a gospel sharing opportunity on the high street of Hounslow.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. Richard
Jazz.
Yeah.
An evening of jazz and the gospel sort of weaved in. Yeah. The gospel feeds weaved in.
Yeah. Okay.
Rather Bry with Rory Stay.
So that was
the Mandela's Bodyguards.
Oh yeah. With. So that was an interview.
Yeah.
Yeah. John?
Yeah, it was an interview with an airline pilot, part of the Passion Flight. So it was put on by John's church, a variety of churches around Leatherhead, Epsom, just were involved.
Christ Church, my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on, let's say
yes. Yes, I served it as a guest for interview and special event for Ukrainian, for Ukraine situation in Ukraine. And some Ukrainians visited this event, and I had a conversation with three Ukrainians and believers on this event, even before event. Yeah. Food and music, conversation, and a very good sermon about hope in Christ and interview.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, I've written those down simply just to give us a flavour of the kind of events that we're talking about. Well, help us think a bit more about the kind of events that we might do in due course. But it just interesting to get a bit of a flavour there. I mean, two of those I knew about. Actually, no, I knew about Mandela's procession. That's pretty common. We've done something similar. We did a to John Summerfest. We used to do a thing on the park at Tooting Common. A lot of effort. But anyway, we'll come back to that. Just off the top of your head, this isn't determinative. What were some of the good things about the events that you thought of?
Okay.
Yeah. Football. People. Yeah. Which people?
Say again.
Which people?
Local people.
Yeah. Local and non-Christian, or was it just church?
Yeah, non-Christians.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Any other good things about the event?
For mine, it was public and very visible before the non-Christian world.
Can I ask a question on that? Was it also helpful, public and visible?
Yeah, no.
Okay. Well, that's the bad. No. Yeah. Other good things about what we did?
Clear topic in my case.
Yeah.
Clear topic about struggle and fear in Ukraine and hope in Christ.
Yeah, that's really hard, isn't it? Yeah, so it's, I call it gospel related.
Yeah, I think it's
appropriate.
It's about how church can meet the problem in this world.
Yeah.
Church families and confidence in it, that confidence invite, confidence that's going to be good, that it's not going to be embarrassing.
And that, I think that relation to John's point earlier, doesn't it? In other words, you know, the first year, everyone's like, oh, really, jazz? Seriously? Gospel through jazz? Really? And then people are raving about it, and you put it on again, it's like, no, it's really good. It's that building momentum. Yeah. Any other good things you can think of? I think it's a benefit to the church family. In other words, I think one of the good things is it gets the church family active, both inviting but also in running. I think that's a good thing. Not just passive and worrying about Sunday, it's actually doing something else.
I mean, it's related to people coming, but just getting people into our new building.
Yeah.
And getting them into where we meet for church.
Yes, if I call it a sacred space, sure. You know what I mean by that. I don't actually mean that, but yeah. Okay, what about some of the bad things? Some of the downsides for those particular events that you could think of?
The larger turnout of Christians and non-Christians. So there were non-Christians there, but it wasn't an outreach event. But,
yeah. So the non-Christians were a minority, so they've been invited. It just affects the mood, doesn't it? It affects the sway of that.
I mean, you've hinted it with some of us, but an enormous amount of work.
Yeah.
To put off.
Yeah. And so,
there's no clear next step. Like, what's the kind of come to this thing? What?
Yeah, so an enormous next step. I was on this, the flip side of the clear gospel appropriate, sort of clear topic appropriate gospel related. There is a danger that you put an awful lot of effort into something which actually has no gospel content. And I'm not saying that's good or bad. Well, actually, I'm saying if your entire program is bad, it's bad. There's no gospel in it. You've got loads of people. They have a great time. There's no meaningful traction going on there in any way, shape, or form. You know, that's not ideal. But we can come back to that. Okay, we'll come back to some of those things. Now, a lot of the stuff we're going to look at is, I've been influenced by Ray's book, if you've seen that. It's a good little book. I think, you know, it's worth reading, definitely worth reading, but with a pen in hand and just plunder stuff onto a sheet of paper. You could put there's a smaller version of that book that could be written, to be honest. But it's great. Here's some stuff I got from that. This is written by Dave Bennett, University of Sheffield. I think he wrote it through whatever the college is up there. I think it might be a master's or something like that. So a study of how adults become Christians with special reference to the personal involvement of individual Christians. 400 adult converts to Christianity. He became Christians between 1995 and 2002. With over 92% had a relationship with a Christian before they were converted. And I think that just means friendship rather than, you know, yes, not romantic. And 86% said it was significant to their conversion. In other words, between 1995 and 2002, 400 people converted as adults said that 92% of them had a relationship with a Christian before, and 86% said it was significant to their conversion. In other words, friendship matters. Of the converts, 87% were given an invitation to some kind of event. So this is one of the key findings of this study, that second only to praying for them, giving them an invitation was the most significant way Christians have helped. Now, I'll go on. The come and see, go and tell. There's a bit of a pendulum swing, and the sort of the go and tell is brilliant, isn't it? We want every single person in our congregation to be equipped to explain the gospel to an unbeliever such that they could lead them to faith in Christ. That's the ideal. We'd love that to be true. I don't think it's a zero-sum game. I don't think we therefore say, that's what we want, therefore we don't want this, which is invitational, come and see. You still want to come and see. And interestingly, and actually I wonder whether it's, I think it might be contextually determined, but it's interesting that in lots of contexts, actually having friendship, inviting someone to come to something, I mean, does actually get people to where they want to go. Now, I'm going to say more about that because the skills required to invite are significantly less perhaps than the skills to explain the gospel. But we'll get to that. But let me give you, this is from the National Ministry Survey, three things which I think are encouraging. First of all, whatever you're going to do and propose in terms of come and see, go and tell, Christians are generally on board with what you're proposing. So 2 in 3 Protestant churchgoers believe that every Christian has a responsibility to talk to non-Christians about Jesus. Now, so in other words, in your congregation, 65% of people think that what you're proposing is a good idea. Now, I don't know what your experience is of persuading a church family to do things, but you know, I'll take those odds. If 65% of people think that, generally speaking, Christians ought to be talking to non-Christians about Jesus, when you begin to talk about an evangelistic strategy, everyone's like, oh, okay. Now, I think that might matter more in a revitalization than it would in a church plant, because I think in a church plant, one of the key reasons that people are going is evangelistically. They want to reach the area into which you're planted. But if you're doing a revitalization, it's probably getting the congregation to think outside of itself is a much bigger thing. But courage, isn't it? I mean, and actually, if you could, it might be that you need to say, hey, look, these ideas, just worth knowing, 65% of Christians think it's a good idea. Now, we may not be representative of the Christian body as a whole. You know, it might be that all of you lot are in the 35%, but we just need to know we're in a minority amongst the Christians. So I think that's an encouragement. Not everything we suggest in church goes down well. My observation would be evangelistic stuff usually does. Now, they might have issues about what you're doing and when you're doing it and how you're doing it, but the principle of we want to reach unbelievers with the gospel is a good thing. But anyway, let me move on. This isn't the silver bullet church growth. These are the numbers of people that have come to faith in Christ. So church leaders see small numbers come to faith. Average number of people that leaders have seen become Christians in the past 3 years from outside the church or the unchurched is 5. It's not many, is it? So in a church congregation, a church leader would say in the past 3 years, on average, 5 people have become Christians. 3 is the average number of people that leaders have seen become Christians in the past 3 years who are already church attendees. So that's kind of, that's the fringe. The 5 is from outside. Not massive numbers, but I take it. If that was true every year, that would be brilliant. But in other words, this isn't, it's not as though your church plant or your church revitalization is bumbling along. But it's okay, because I went to a seminar about an evangelistic strategy. And now we've got an evangelistic strategy, cha-ching, suddenly young believers are going to be knocking down the doors. No, even in, across the UK scene, people are not seeing masses of people become Christians. So, you know, we want more than that. It's just helpful, isn't it? And I think it could be that we're not doing the right thing in the right way, and that's why the numbers are low. Or it could just be, this is what you get from doing the right thing in the right way. The rewards are slower at the moment. We're in the Lord's hands. Those questions are worth it. But what we're about to talk about is not the silver bullet, where suddenly you'll go cha-ching and, you know, the nations will flood in. Okay. Thirdly, this is encouraging. The public are comfortable talking about religion and Jesus. So comfortable talking about religion with family, friends, work. So basically, so if you've got family, friends, or colleagues, on the whole, broadly speaking, 1 in 2 of them, at least 1 in 2 of them, are happy talking about religion. Slightly less comfortable talking about Jesus. Family and friends are more willing to talk about Jesus than they are Daniel and colleagues would be, which you might expect. But that's not bad, is it? In other words, 50% of the people that you meet on the whole, probably, if they are family, friends, or colleagues, difficult for us because most of us are in the Christian world, people are comfortable talking about faith. In other words, it's not a totally unwelcome thing. We can allow the narrative of hostility, conflict, some of the ethical pointy bits of Christianity being unwelcome in the workplace. We can allow those to shape us unnecessarily, whereas actually in relationships, in conversations, on the whole, people are happy to talk about religion and Jesus. Now, I think those 3 things provide some encouragement for us. In other words, church is not a bunker into which we escape while the non-Christian bombs go on above us. And we're just waiting for Jesus to come, shout down into the bunker, you know, I'm here now, we're safe to go home. All right. Now, in previous conversations, you guys will be familiar with the Go and Tell, Come and See. Go and Tell, missional. The emphasis is on equipping the church family to take the gospel out of the church into the world. I absolutely believe that is what we're meant to do, because that is what Ephesians 4 tells us to do. Where, you know, pastors, teachers, evangelists are to equip the saints for their work and ministry. I absolutely want the scenario where the church family is being equipped to take the gospel to the nations and to their neighbours. Okay? So that's a non-negotiable for me. And that has to be there in your strategy. But also come and see the invitational approach, and the emphasis is on encouraging the church family to invite the world into the church to hear the gospel. So it's like, and for me, it's both and, it's not a zero-sum game. They're not in competition with one another. It's not either or. And I take it that a healthy church plant or church revitalization will want to equip its members to take the gospel to family, neighbours, colleagues and friends, as well as provide centralized opportunities for people to explore the gospel. So in other words, I think, as we did with British Church Peckham, two things. Number one, we had a two-way slip training course, and we also ran what we call Christianity Explained. So Christianity Explained was our meal with the gospel event, centralized, just invite people, no expertise required, just get your mates there. Two ways to live was, we're going to try and give you training in a gospel outline. Actually a bit of a failure. Because I started, I'm a massive fan of two ways to live, I love it. But we started with the expectation everyone will learn, if you know it, that everyone will learn the diagrams and the phraseology and the verses, and not only what the verses are, but what the verses say. That was the ambition. Week two. Right, if they remember, generally speaking, what you say in each box, that's good. If they can remember a verse, right, by the end, it was literally, if I've got the logic of the gospel that Jesus came, died on the cross and took our sin and we can be forgiven, the decision is made, that's a win. Because people were just not used to that. It was just not their mental architecture. I mean, you know, I'm a weird creature that sort of did engineering at university, so I like it. Oh, box one, box two. There are certain things in box one, and the same things in box one as box two, because every box has to have a verse. That works well for my slightly adult brain. But yeah, so look, that's what we're talking about. So look, what are we trying to do in your plan for growth? You're not your plan for launch. You know, look, you don't have to do it this way, but this is a pathway. You're trying to turn a totally disinterested unbeliever into a fully devoted disciple of Christ. So in other words, you've got to have a plan, haven't you, to take Billy the non-Christian, engage him with friendship, sort of meaningful interaction with Christians. You want to move him on to a place where he can be evangelized with the gospel. If God tips him over into the kingdom, you want them to establish him in the truth, and you want to equip him to serve in a multiplicity of ways as he grows into maturity. That's what church is doing. It's a discipleship-making factory. When you have four E's, five P's, two Q's, I don't care. There just needs to be a sense of progression, which is helpful for you. What we're thinking about is, what are we doing here? What are we doing here, both in terms of go and tell, but also in terms of come and see? So what sits under here? So for us, when we did British Church Peckham, no historic background to us, nothing. We couldn't assume anything. Very low numbers to begin with. What's our strategy? We'll only have one thing. We'll only do one thing. Let's just do one thing. That's not too much, because we'll kill people. We've got to be sensible. So our engagement thing, door knocking. That's all we did. All we did. Just we met people that we didn't know through that. Evangelize, well, we changed it. So we went from go and tell to come and see in the first instance. While under there, I'm trying to equip people in how to explain the gospel. But in order to get that going, that's what we're doing. So that's what we're thinking about. We're thinking about what comes under those two things in your plan. Okay, now, so look, let's talk very quickly about why we might run attractional events. Because we're aware there are some downsides. This is why we might run them. First of all, accommodation to non-Christians. I think attraction events allow them to be in the minority, hide away, and listen. We want to provide events that make it easy for non-Christian to come to something. We want to remove barriers for them. We want the only obstacle that they encounter to be the call to repentance, to accept Christ as Lord. Now, I think we need to be really wary of the bait and switch, which is, you know, we bait them with, to a night of salsa dance and switch to an evening listening to a talk on penal substitution and atonement. It's like, hang on a second, what just happened there? I thought I was going to be getting up close with a bit of salsa dancing and shifting my hips. Instead, I've discovered that Jesus Christ died on the cross. And I was just, that's not bad news. I just wasn't expecting it. So we want things, I think, in events. Why we might want attraction events is to provide attractive things that offer anonymity, that make it easy for non-Christians to come in. And in one sense, some sympathy to their progression from, you know, what is a Christian? What is the gospel? To kind of, what is it? To get in, okay, now I'm engaged. Some sort of delineation between those things. So events allow us to do that. And just have some sympathy of allowing people to come slowly and sort of come and see. Secondly, concession to Christians. So accommodation to non-Christians. And I think that's good. I think we want to be accommodating to non-Christians because they are ignorant, like we were. And we want to be compassionate towards them. So let's make it easy for them to encounter the gospel. Secondly, concession to Christians. While it would be ideal if all Christians could point away from themselves to their saviour, we have to admit that some find it easier to do that than others. In other words, I think equipping people to be missional and to encounter people's objections and know how to listen to those and respond to them is going to be tricky. You know, it's going to require reading some books or listening to some YouTube videos or getting your head around some apologetics arguments. And it may just be that it's not a people's skill set to be able to articulate the gospel persuasively. And therefore, events allow you to sort of say, that's okay. Either you're newly converted, and that's all right, or you're not newly converted, but that's not your skill set. But let's not allow that to be the limiting factor why your friends couldn't hear the gospel. So I think events are concessions to Christians. And of course, you know, wonderfully, it could be. I mean, the reason that Alpha used to have the meal at the end of every course was because that's where they got all of their participants for the next one. In other words, you know, you start with people and they come. They're non-Christians. And they, by the end, they think, this is fantastic. This is amazing. Guess what? Well, the course is finished, but next we've got an Alpha supper. So why not bring your friends? I want to bring my friends because they need to do this. In other words, it's the people who are most enthusiastic who will bring people. So that's why they did it. It was, you know, they still had lots of non-Christian friends. They probably weren't completely clear on the gospel themselves. Probably, especially if they're doing Alpha, they just need a bit more content in there about who Jesus is and why he came. But they know there's enough here to be positive about it. So, you know. Concessions to Christians. Thirdly, recognition of gifting. I think we came to that, talked about that earlier. The Spirit gifts different Christians differently, 1 Corinthians 12. We're all equipped to serve, but we're not all equipped to serve in the same way. Some will do one thing, others will do another, and some will be especially good evangelists. But I think that the role of the evangelist in the church is to equip the saints for the work of ministry, in Ephesians 4. But events to which we bring people so they can hear someone. So events are things that we hold in church which allow someone who's really good at explaining the gospel to people to explain the gospel to people. So it's a recognition of gifting, but also it means that other people with other gifts can use that. For example, can't explain the gospel, but I'm really good with the bass guitar. So guess what? Come to a bass, you know, double bass. Come to an evening on jazz. I can do that. I can serve in that way. Or whatever. So I think they are, I think sometimes we're a bit negative about come and see stuff, but for those reasons, I think it is worth thinking about. But I also want to suggest, here are some reasons why we might not run attractional events. So sometimes they can just feel a little bit corporate. just it's a bit kind of, hang on a second, this isn't, it's a bit forced. It's just a bit, it's not very natural. It's not very authentic. We've gone to a special effort, and in that special effort, we've somehow lost some credibility. And to be honest, we're not doing quite as well as, well, you know, the corporate world or the entertainment world would do it. So it's just a bit of a lame church event that's aiming at something that can't hit it. So that might be a reason why. So if you think in your context you'll lose credibility by doing something that is kind of come and see, then do it. But we'll help you think about how to make those decisions in a moment. Secondly, they're a little inflexible. In other words, it's one size fits all. So if you're not interested in the bloke talking about his 12 years as being a Concorde airplane pilot, you're not going. And so sometimes making judgments about the events you go for is tricky, because do you go niche? Do you go for big coverage? What works? Where you've got an intergenerational, intercultural church, that's going to be tricky as well. It's tricky for us. So BALA, the single biggest event every year for us, in which we get the greatest number of non-Christians. What do you reckon that was?
Carol service.
Yeah, carol service. Pub carols in particular. Pub carols, absolutely massive. And they full on got the gospel. There was no hanging around. We absolutely went for it. In a very sort of stand-up-y kind of a way, because that was a violent thing. So, of course, going to Peckham, what's the key thing that I implement? Carol service. What's the single biggest event in most West African contexts? Any ideas? Watch night, New Year's Eve. Massive, huge, extraordinary. People will drive huge distances to go to it. It's like, hang on a second, it hadn't even crossed my radar. I hadn't even thought about it. So we ran a carol event. It was great. We did it really well. There were some people there, worth doing. But it was just not the culture of some of the people who were there. It's like, you know, hang on a second, what's going on here? How does this work? And that was the kind of sort of, you know, importing of a culture. We didn't do a watch night. And so we missed an opportunity there. And the watch night is literally, you come, you eat, you pray, you sing, and you're there for a long time, a really long time. And, you know, but my one-size-fits-all carol service, this must work. No, interesting. So when you've got sort of intercultural stuff, you've got decisions to make. Thirdly, they are pretty costly, time, effort, money. So what were one thing we thought about? Yeah, so Mandela's bodyguard. I mean, in one sense, that can work. We did something similar. We had an IRA bomber come in. I think that was right. And we're in the pub, worked quite well, it's quite relaxed. But you've got to book the hall, make sure there's some food, make sure the lighting and the sound, the invitations are produced, you're negotiating with people to make sure that they're there, all that kind of stuff. It just takes effort, doesn't it? Whereas actually, you're sat in a coffee shop, it's something you're talking about the gospel. It's just relaxed. It's, you know, it's just easier. So those are some of the reasons why there's negativity. I don't know, do you want to add to those? Either positively or negatively? I think we put an awful lot of effort into our park party, which is nowhere near the scale of Revive, but kind of, you know, essentially reaching young families, lots of sort of stuff happening, stalls, and it's like a really good fete, and then sort of open air church. There's a lot of effort went into that, and we probably lacked someone who loved doing that. So we lacked what I call a Rosie Dunn, which will mean something to some of you, but not to others. So she's a character down at Dunton. She used to just love organising stuff and would do it brilliantly. And for her, that was brilliant. And she had no qualms in saying, in recruiting people, because she used a gentle smile on her face, suggest that it was an opportunity to serve. And just unashamed, just brilliant. So we didn't quite have that kind of character. Someone who's like, John, I love organising. I'm on this. I'm all over it. If I've got someone like that, set them free. But any comments on this? Either positive or negative stuff?
I think one thing is what you attract people with is what you have to keep them with.
Yeah.
So just kind of, particularly the one, that number one being corporate, you think if you do this thing really well, but it's, and that's what's drawing on,
yeah,
concert or whatever. What's your music like? Mm-hmm. You know, and not that that's why they're coming to the church, but there is going to be that standard. So yeah. That's what the gospel, I think, must be clear in these, however that's organized. That's really what we're
trying to draw it to. Yeah, really helpful.
Thank you.
And you touched on the kind of authentic, like the natural, organic, like that is, you know, because even in the title, like go and tell, this is something of the, live your life,
yeah,
shining brightly, like, as in go and tell isn't learn two ways to live and present the gospel,
yeah,
you know what I mean? And come and see doesn't quite capture something of the community and the family of God. I mean, it might do. If your come and see is come to church and oh, we've got lunch together, and but if it's just like a corporate event, then you're missing some of the absolute rich USPs of what's
yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if that
particularly true culturally. Like the stats are very interesting, but like 95. 2002, like, is a long time ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
20 years. Whether there is something more about, like actually church being a massive apologetic for the gospel and that being the thing that engages people. Like, obviously, you've got to get them there. You've got to think about that. But, it, like, I don't know, we're thinking about events.
We'll come to church. Church.
Yeah.
But, I don't know whether you've ever come across. So that's. As Martin Middleberg's equation in the contagious, how to be a contagious Christian, which is not a bad book actually, and he talks about maximum impact for the gospel being the summation of close proximity, clear communication, and higher potency. In other words, close proximity, have friends, and traction. You need that. People need to rub up against non-Christians. Clear communication, you need to be able to communicate gospel. And then high potency is godliness. There's got to be a reason why the non-Christian is thinking, why am I paying attention to this person? And the potency thing is a kind of, hang on a second, there's something about this guy that I can't quite put my finger on that requires an explanation. And I still find that really helpful. How do we make maximum impact for the gospel? By having godly people in our congregation, the church, a life that requires an explanation. You know, so why would you listen to Julian Kessler? Well, because of what he's been through. There is something, clear communication, in other words, people need to be explained. What difference does Jesus make in terms of his life, death, resurrection, return? Let me, with this, I think I'll close. For coffee. How do you decide what to do? So this I think is some of the framework, and you might want to add to this. And so if you've got stuff, add it on. First of all, you've got to pay attention to your context. That might be a geographical context, or for someone like Sergey, it's a sociological context. It is Russian-speaking people. You've got to pay attention to your context. See, if you're honest and you understand your context, you know what will work and you know what won't work. So I have to confess, I was really surprised that jazz would work at Mayfair. I just thought that is not a genre of music I think will gain any traction here at all. So I was surprised by that. Good surprise. But you know your context, so you know what will work. Now, ways to think about that is to ask yourself, given who we're trying to reach, what do they do? What do they like? Where do they congregate? When do they congregate? What do they congregate for? So ask those questions of the non-Christian community you're trying to reach. And then you've got a flavour you know, is it high end? Actually, is it just food? Is it music or not music? Is it book clubs or is it arguments in the pub? Just, you know your situation well, and so ask those questions. And in one sense, be contextually shaped. Know what you're walking into. You might want to be completely countercultural. That's okay. You've just got to know that you are being countercultural. Manage your expectations. If you're going with a culture, you've got to know that you're going to rub up against these expectations of the way that things will work. So immerse yourself in that. Secondly, pay attention to your resources. It's an obvious one, isn't it? You know what you've got at your disposal in terms of venues, locations, people with their abilities and their talents. So, for example, at Ballon, I would not have chosen to do this. It's great. I went, enjoyed it. Actually, they probably had one or two friends who came to it. We ran a classical music evening because we had about half a dozen professional classical musicians in our congregation. And hearing Anna Pym play the violin was just unbelievable. It's just extraordinary. And, you know, I don't normally listen to classical music, but boy, was I going to sit and listen to her when she played that thing, because she was outstanding. And then we had Ross Garrett stood up and professional percussionist and sort of explained why music wasn't his be-all and end-all, but Jesus was. Now, I would not have thought about doing that were it not for the fact that we had a bunch of musicians who said, look, we could put this on, it would work really well, we just need the score, and we can invite some okay. I don't know if everyone's cup of tea, but it's some people's cup of tea. What is one? So we had those resources at our school. So look within your congregation and ask yourself, what can we do with what we've got? That's worth asking. Pay attention to the rhythm of the year. This is just my observation. So, for example, in the States, you would know when Vacation Bible School runs, VBS as it's called. You know, you would know exactly when that runs. For us, we found in Ballon, we found February half term was an absolute winner to run a holiday Bible club, because people weren't so wealthy they were all going off skiing, and therefore they had kids at home, and we would offer them a morning of respite. So we had loads of kids come into that. Now, the tricky thing was, it was difficult to manage because, you know, most of our congregation would work. Some of them took holiday, to their credit. And so that, so we ran that there. But it's paying attention to the rhythm of the year. So, for example, you will begin to know when your people are around and when they're off. You'll know whether it's Easter or Christmas are the key times. You will understand the rhythm of the year. So for me, I think in Ballon, August is a complete waste of time. For almost anything, because people are away. People are away on holiday. Now, it won't be for everyone. I imagine that some internationals might be quite critical. I imagine people moving to London might be critical, but the families are kind of just, you know, it's downtime. What's striking, of course, is young professionals don't go on holiday in August if they can avoid it. Why? Because if you go in June or you go in September, you get better value for money. So, you know, people might, you know, but you know when works and you know when doesn't. But pay attention to the rhythm of the year and work with it. Work out when are people around, when are they off, what works when, those kinds of things. Pay attention to the pattern of the week. Again, it's a similar thing. You will know which nights of the week work. So for us, we always go Monday evening because that works. It's early. Thursday, rubbish. Thursday, rubbish because that's what, you know, this is pre-pandemic. That's, you know, that's social night. It's not Friday night. That's not work colleagues. Thursday night is work colleagues into Friday. Friday, Saturday, on the whole, don't do anything. People are collapsing. But we worked out we could do, so we had pub quiz on the Monday night. We would have a pub quiz, we'd run it on Monday night, and that would work. It was early in the week. Now, the trouble was, of course, Monday night was church meeting night. Not small group, but church meeting night. Well, we're a church that wants to reach unbelievers with the gospel. So guess what? Whatever that church meeting was, we have to find another time for it. So don't get the tail wagging the donkey. Tail, donkey, whatever. But you know what I mean.
That would be
weird. Yeah. Likewise, sometimes, who knows, if a Wednesday night works, make it Wednesday. We ran a Christianity Explored in parallel with our morning meeting nights. So everyone in, and then Sunday's a really good time. People are free. Well, come to church, see what church looks like, but don't sit in for my sermon on Melchizedek in Hebrews 7. Why not go there and look at what Jesus talked about when he, talked about, our greatest need is the need of forgiveness. So those are some things. I'll break there. We'll come back. But any comments quickly on it? So I think that helps you decide what you're doing in terms of events. But any comments on that or things you want to add?
When you move into a new area, how long do you think it takes to sort of learn your context, to be able to really know what to pay attention to and not?
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's really worth doing a whole load of stuff beforehand. Where in one sense you've got permission. So it's the quantitative stuff. Because I think that's quite helpful because it helps you see stuff that you may not have realised. So I remember talking to Stockwell before Stockwell was going through its kind of, actually, we're not working, we need to do something different. I turned up to a meeting there with Trevor and others with a quantitative analysis of who lived in Stockwell, and it was so not what they were expecting. And it wasn't what I was expecting, but it was there from the data. So that's quite helpful because the numbers don't lie, but the numbers don't give you enough. You need to be in that place to do the kind of the quantum. I think the thing I had to learn was in balance, it's a more nuanced picture than I had thought. So there were things that were almost, I didn't quite get. So I used to describe it as a postgraduate university campus. But it's more than that because people would stay. And so there were these two things. There were actually young families because they were primary schools, and yet it was a massive destination for recent graduates. So those two things. And actually people do want to stay, but then they drift. But balance still becomes their centre. So you live in Stratton, but go to a restaurant in Ballon.